bring this committee to order.
Let's bring this committee to order. I know Representative Pepin has been checking the minutes and would like to move them.
Yes, I would. I move the minutes.
Thank you. Changes or revisions that need to be done to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor of the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Minutes are passed. And today we have the Southern Minnesota Regional Competitive Partnership. And I've heard many good things about this particular group. So I've been looking forward to this this presentation. I'll bring up the names, and if they're all still here, that'd be great. There's Pam Bishop, Larry Anderson, John Munson, and Rebecca Kent. Oh, good. I didn't.
Larry is not here.
Oh, Larry is not here. Okay. All right. I want you all to know that you have a group from one of the middle schools. It's Farmington Middle School, which I believe is in the area that you are trying to put together a plan for their future. So, welcome to our committee. We try to do bioscience and workforce training here, and the policy that it entails, and try to figure out how, when you're 24 and trying to create that career for yourself, we have some opportunities in this state for you. So welcome to our committee. I hope you learned something today. Having said all that, why don't we just proceed with the PowerPoint? I hope everyone has at least checked it out once, and I'll let you introduce yourself for the record and then start as you need to. Thank you for coming before the committee today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm John Munson with AgStar Financial Services. I work out of Apple Valley, Minnesota. I am the Vice President for Rural Finance, and sort of initiated this process here by meeting with the Rural Policy Research Institute, RUPRI, their Director for Regional Competitiveness, Mark Dravenstad, in Kansas City in November of 2007, and sort of became aware of and understood potential here in southern Minnesota, and that's really where this sort of began, and we have a number of partners that have developed since then, and the two next to me here have been very important partners in this process. I'll let them introduce themselves.
Chairman Mahoney, committee members, my name is Rebecca Kent, and I work with the Biobusiness Alliance of Minnesota.
Good morning, Chairman Mahoney and committee members. I'm Pam Bishop, and I'm with the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation.
Well, thank you. Please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, we have a, and committee members, we have, I think, something transformational to share with you today. As you've probably gathered, I'm from the private sector. I used to work at USDA for 14 years, and six of those years as a state director. And I've been all around the state a number of times. Come from a small town, White Lakes, Minnesota. For those of you that might know about White Lakes, LTV plant, taconite plant, shut down. Impacted my family greatly. A lot of people unemployed. They left, uprooted. Family was torn apart, really, over the whole thing. And it's given me a pretty deep passion. I've got a picture of that last train leaving White Lakes on my wall in my office, have since I was at USDA, and have it today. And as part of the private sector, there's something really cool happening here, and that's an opportunity for a collaboration between rural partners that are private, nonprofit, and government to come together and do something that isn't necessarily strategic, visionary, or intuitive, but more driven by analytics. That's what the private sector loves. And the opportunity for us to do it in collaboration with nonprofit government partners is what really, in my mind, makes this different and special. This is not about the premise from which we start where we're looking to sustain and survive. It's an opportunity to look forward in rural Minnesota, creating a model that allows us to succeed globally, to become globally competitive. And that's really the nature of this project, Southern Minnesota Regional Competitiveness Project. It began in January of last year on the coldest day in Minnesota. We held a meeting in Mankato and brought 50 plus partners in a room and asked them, if they would be interested in doing something different. And that's coming together and really identifying, based on analytics, based on research, what the next best step is for Southern Minnesota. And then, if we were successful, consider replicating it in other parts of Minnesota or other regions of the United States. This is the first of its kind in the country, and we're very proud to be initiating this effort in Minnesota and demonstrating that it doesn't take a lot of tax dollars to do something really good. In this project, just to frame it up, it's about a $250,000 project to hire the research on this. 90%+ of this is not government dollars. The first grant through Workforce, huge partners in this process, have put in, I think, $25,000 of the total, or somewhere around there. It'll cost a little over $250,000 for the research and the meetings, the summits, and so on. But the rest of it is nonprofit and private dollars. AgStar, where I represent, has put in the lion's share of it. We've got $80,000 into this project. Lost a lot of in-kind time and services. Same with my partners here. This has been hard work. This has not been easy. At times, I felt a little like it's herding cats, frankly, because a lot of people have initiatives and turf and so on. But really getting everybody to think differently as a region and think beyond where we're at is where we're starting. So I'm going to take you through this here a little bit. This is the Southern Minnesota region. I hope you can see that. The blue area is the 38 counties. This has sort of evolved. Started at 22 counties, moved to 30, now it's 38. And it stayed there. And I don't think it's going to move. I think it's going to stay at 38 counties. We're really proud of the opportunity to think differently. When there's a win in this region in Big Stone County, that Houston County will view it as a win. Instead of having one town 5 miles apart from the other competing where there really isn't critical mass to compete. That's the difference maker. It's when a region brands itself and really begins to look at what is the broader good, what are the assets, what are the business clusters in the region, what does the research tell us is our best investments for the future. This is an effort to do that. So, the people, this region is the people who live and work here. A region can be any number of things, but this region has come together. We have had cities, government workers, nonprofits, private partners. Over 500+ people have now engaged in this process through a series of, I believe, 13 meetings to help this region succeed. And we have defined the region ourselves. It's what we believe is the region. And the region's workforce shares key specializations and the region's business form sort of a three-legged stool. The real powerhouses in the region are agriculture, healthcare, and manufacturing. But there are many other assets in that region. But they're the three powerhouses within the region. The question becomes, where they intersect, what kind of power can be derived in terms of investment for the future? How can we leverage the strength of the three, along with others, together with the Rochesters, together with the Mankatos, to really leverage the strength of the region, ultimately, for those 38 counties? So we have 38 counties, almost 1 million people. Nearly two-thirds of Minnesota's farm income is derived from this territory. Having been the Farm Service Agency State Director, I've been there many times. I've been to every county at least 4 times in the last 7 years. You really begin to get a pulse on what's happening in rural communities when you visit with community leaders and a lot of other folks. Our team at AgStar, in fact, has visited with over 500 communities in the last year alone. And you really get a sense of the potential of this project and the potential of its replication across other parts of Minnesota when you can see what we've done. And we hope that we'll demonstrate the value here today. There's world-class health care. You all understand about Mayo. And I don't think, to be forgotten on the research side, I don't think we can forget about Hormel Research Institute and the amazing work that they're doing. Schwann's company, Marshall, Minnesota, the largest frozen food company in the world, headquartered in Marshall, Minnesota, within this region. There are many others, by the way. Strong manufacturing, employing 1 of the 5 workers in the region, and a number of excellent education institutions in the Minsky system as well. Mm-hmm. We're going to go through some of the data here, and I'm going to pass this off to Becca. She sort of starts taking you through the region and how it looks and some of the data that supports it.
Thank you, John. Well, looking at this slide, this really helps to define the region, I think, more critically. Many of the region's workers commute within the region, but outside of the region, but 92% of them actually commute and work within the region. So are spending economic dollars and creating economic wealth within the region that they live. And if you look at this slide, this is really some of the brief analytics that we'll share with you today that the Rural Policy Research Institute helped to bring together. And I think it's important. One of the things that's critical about this project is it combines both quantitative analysis of labor information and Census Bureau data, but it also combines that with the qualitative data that the 500 participants that John mentioned think about this region and understand as to where their assets happen to be. So if you look at this slide, there's really two really core strengths outside of the farm sector that's demonstrated here. In fact, if you wanted to hit the slide one more time, please. You can see that health and educational services are probably the biggest here in the region, the second being manufacturing. And if you compare this 38-county region of southern Minnesota to the U.S. as a whole, health and education services are nearly two times as large as the nation as a whole, and manufacturing is nearly three times as large. You can also see on this slide a place where the region has a weakness. The purple section, the 12.5%, is professional and business services. These are things like your lawyers, your financial advisors, all those things that are needed to help a business be successful. And this is only half as big in this 38-county region of southern Minnesota as compared to the whole of the United States. John mentioned the fact that the region has three economic pillars: agriculture, manufacturing, and healthcare. And what you can see here, circled in red on the slides, is the fact that these three industries have over 100,000 jobs in surplus as compared to the national economy. So that's, again, a very large strength for this region on which to build. I'd like to call out specifically the manufacturing sector, because this is something that I think is incredible when you think about the breadth of the manufacturing industry here in this region. There's everything from food manufacturing and processing to high-tech manufacturing with computer and software systems to more of your traditional manufacturing of furniture, machine shops, things of that nature. So there's a real breadth of that manufacturing experience. And one of the things that this data has led to is looking at these core strengths. What are some of the new industries that this region could be taking advantage of? And Pam will talk more about those a little bit later, but those happen to be renewable energy, bioscience, tourism, and specialty foods. So despite the fact that this region, these 38 counties in southern Minnesota, have a very strong base in the farm sector, the manufacturing sector, and the healthcare sector, what this slide shows is the fact that the region is still lagging behind the state and the nation as a whole. This slide shows the green line at the bottom are the number of jobs in this region as compared to the state and the nation. It's quite a bit below what you would expect. The same is true if you would actually look at the income for this region as well. There's a lot of jobs in this region, but they're relatively low paying, and that's something that we hope to change as part of this project. Moving on to the next slide, this really looks at a critical issue for many rural counties, the out-migration of workforce and its talent. You can see here that across this 38-county region, there's only one county, Olmsted County, that had a large increase in the number of population coming in. There's two that are in the light blue, Rice County and Dodge County, that had a small increase, but otherwise every other county has experienced either a small or a large decrease in the amount of population. So with that, I'll turn it over to Pam to talk more about the implementation and the process itself.
Thank you, Becca. As you can see, what does this mean? At the end of the day, what is it that we're really hoping that this partnership and this 12-month project will result in? And it's key, it's important to understand that we need to develop a strategy. No longer, as John mentioned, are we competing state by state. We're competing globally in economic development work. And so important to our region is creating a long-term sustainable strategy that will align with the analytical work and the assets that have been identified through the process. We certainly understand that we need to find better ways to build partnerships, and we hope that our partners do become partners in a way that develops into a partnership. There's a big difference between a partner and a partnership. And so that work is still evolving. We're still identifying who those key partners are, and they probably will change over time. We all understand that the work of developing a project and the work of implementation can be and is often very, very different in its work. And we will continue to prioritize our investments and understand where should we place our emphasis based on the analytics that we understand in our region, as well as the assets, the things that make us such a great region to grow. How have we done this? Well, we've spent considerable time over the last 9 months listening to folks in our region. And through a 10-meeting roundtable discussion, Mark Ravenstadt has done a tremendous job in gathering that information. You know, at the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation, we believe it's our assets that will drive our economy. It's the things that we have already existing in our backyard that we need to emphasize and to promote and to use to our best advantage. And that's what we really wanted to get out of those roundtable discussions. You tell us what is happening in our backyard. You tell us the key drivers, the organizations, the institutions, and the people that are key to economic development. And obviously important is the numbers, understanding what our region has, what our potential is, and what we can do to help change that if we need to. And to continue to gather feedback, and that will occur in March. On March 13th, we will have our future summit, or I should say our future summit. And at that time, Mark will lead us through some more analytics, will help us to really prioritize where we should be focusing our economic development efforts. So our five key steps, as I've mentioned before, is to really analyze our best options. We can't do everything. We can't be everything to everyone. So it is important that we understand where our best opportunities are for success. And when we do discover that and identify that, beginning on March 13th, on May 15th, we will actually have our strategy summit. And at that time, we will roll out our implementation plan. We will help the region and the state understand where we believe our best opportunities for success lie. And so when we're talking to folks and we're sharing with folks like you, committee members, we hope that you will understand the significance of the kind of model this project can offer throughout the state. Significant to our project has been our partners. And John has reminded me that we have, I believe, over 15 partners in the project that are listed on your invitation. I could go through them, but you can easily read them for yourself. And as you can see, they're made up of academic institutions, nonprofits, private sectors, and folks that represent the first grants that were offered through DEED. So it really has been a fun and exciting project. One that has really helped us to underscore and understand where our best opportunities for success lie. And so far, we've identified five areas of economic development that we believe provide us with opportunities based on analytics and assets that have been identified. And that includes renewable energy, food production, recreation and tourism, specialty manufacturing, and bioscience. We have since identified small group discussion forums that we're actually holding as we speak to further identify where those opportunities exist. John mentioned the Hormel Institute in Mayo, the Southern Research and Outreach Center, the agricultural organizations. Those folks are already coming together to discuss ways that we can further collaborate, take advantage of research, take advantage of the private sector, and start finding ways to take science and technology and transfer them into real business opportunities for Southern Minnesota as well as the state. So with that, that really wraps up where we started and where we're ending, and we'd certainly be open for questions and further discussion.
I think Representative Reinhart has got a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, thank you so much for doing an excellent job of presenting the project. And I've been involved at different levels, but I still don't really have a thorough grasp. There's this ongoing aspect to it that I recognize you may not have a thorough grasp of where it's going to go from here either. But I'm very interested in some further discussion about the private-public partnerships here and how I know you've had local governments at the table, but I'm particularly interested in what role you see regional governments as playing, because we have this regional government structure in Minnesota, and I don't know if this is an opportunity to revitalize the role of that regional governance, or how you, you know, what your take is on that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Brainerd, I don't know if I have the perfect answer for this, but I think it's going to revive a lot of groups' engagement in economic development in collaboration with workforce education, private sector, you name it, across the board. We believe it's going to transform the opportunities in the region to become globally competitive, and that cannot happen without the necessary governance. And I use the governance word in terms of leadership or steering committee more than I do governmental. So I think it's going to revive an awful lot of interest and probably institutional expertise in order to make it work. Region 9, for example, is actually, I think, a partner in the process here. The workforce development works very closely with them. We do, too. We're all sort of tied at the hip here in this one. These 15 groups are tied so deeply together in what we're doing, but everybody has a very specific role and a value they bring to the table. So I don't know what it's going to do for them, but I think the opportunity for them to feel revived or be revived in all of this, I think would be a natural, because I don't know that this can succeed without the full, I've asked the partners that have been engaged in this to be full partners, not partial partners or see through the piece that they're most interested in, but full partnership, full engagement, all the way through, sustained, ongoing, through the process of research, through the process of investment, through the process of development, commercialization, and ongoing. And that takes a lot of people, a lot of workforce, a lot of education, a lot of groups to make that happen. So, long answer, but that really is the opportunity.
Long answers are here.
Yeah.
Representative Gottlaw?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, Mr. Chair, thanks to our testifiers. This is inspirational, and I know we have some other initiatives around the state. It may make sense at some point, I'm thinking, to hear from some of the other regions in the state that are embarking on similar things, either through their initiative foundations and so forth. I noticed that the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation and Southwest Initiative Foundation are partners with you. How are you interacting with them? How does that work?
Representative Gottwald, and Chairman Mahoney, committee members, we are working together. The foundation, as I mentioned, firmly believes that this kind of model only helps us understand what assets we have across the state. And since between the two foundations, we represent the 38 counties as a whole, it really made sense that we've come to the table and help organize and help in some respects logistically gather the partners with the support of AgSTAR. When you try, as John mentioned, herd cats at times, it takes the efforts of organizations that really represent the broader purpose. And that's really the role that we have thought we can play. We understand our regions to the point that we understand the importance of partnerships. And we feel that between both organizations, the work that is coming together aligns so well with what we believe both regions represent in regards to the foundations as a whole. What we hope we can do is bring focus. I think going back to John's comment in regional governance, as I mentioned before, we can't be everything to everyone. But if we can help our regions, our 38 counties understand the focus that we should be paying attention to, I think that's the role the foundations can play. And so, you know, we're still working through all of this. We're not the owner of this project. You know, we are a partner of the project. And so there's a fine line there when you're trying to gather partnerships of who's actually steering the project. Because you want everyone to feel like they're contributing, that they're important, and that they have something to bring to the table. And so as the foundations and AgSTAR and the other partners evolve in this process, we will try to figure out how we can continue to play an important role.
Paula?
Just a comment, Mr. Chair, if I might. You know, it's exciting to hear this kind of initiative because you need that sense of urgency and the integration and the collaboration. It takes a whole community, you know, to overuse a couple of terms, grassroots, What was that, Representative Winkler?
Mr. Chair, I thought you were going to, Representative Gowell, I thought you were going to say it takes a village.
I was going to say it takes a community.
Continue on.
I'll use it. It takes a village to accomplish economic development. There it is. We can all sign up.
Come on, we have the middle school children here. We don't have to. Never mind.
It's great to hear that everybody is coming together and getting that alignment. That alignment and coordination herding cats is so vital. And, good luck.
I'm going to take the prerogative as chair before I call on Representative Obermueller. Have other initiative foundations been in contact to kind of figure out how you're herding these cats?
Chairman Mahoney and committee members, no, not to my knowledge. I'm sure they're hearing about it, but as we speak today, the Minnesota Initiative Foundations are having a retreat. Our president, Tim Penny, is visiting with all the other presidents of the MIPS, so I'm sure in their conversations they're hearing about it and perhaps they're even asking questions. So it probably is happening.
Thank you. Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll echo Representative Gottwell's comments. I think you see we're all kind of giddy up here to talk about a partnership that's working between the state and the private businesses, because we all want to see that happen more. I have two questions. One relates to what your involvement with Deed has been, what type of assets they've given to you, if they've been helping with the plan. And then sort of a second part to that is I've heard quite a bit of talk about developing the assets and figuring out what's out there, and obviously the people who are going to be doing the jobs of the future are a big part of those assets. And I'd like your thoughts on where you see your role in finding out what businesses, what employees businesses need for the future, and the connection you're doing between those businesses and the workforce centers and the colleges to make sure that we're putting the right kinds of people in those businesses.
Chairman Mahoney, Representative Obermueller, first question on Deed. Deed has been a critical partner to us. They are not a financial partner in this process. Obviously, they have some financial constraints, as you might imagine. But we recognize that they've provided a lot of in-kind support for what we're doing in terms of staff time and leadership, very engaged, especially Kevin Kelleher in Southeast Minnesota. And the data, much of what you see here, comes from Deed. If you go to our website, which I can't remember the name of, what is our website?
Minnesota Real Partners.
MinnesotaRealPartners.com, is that what it is? Or org. And you can go there and you'll see a lot of the data. The data is derived from Deed. And that data has been crunched and used and changed around. And so a lot of that data has come from them. They've done some amazing work. In fact, the Real Policy Research Institute has mentioned that the data that Deed has had has been some of the best they've seen in the country. So to their credit. But they've been pretty important partners in the process. There is some pride amongst us, though. There are very few tax dollars in this. It's a collaboration, but there's an awful lot of leadership here from the private sector and the nonprofits. And I think that's what makes it pretty effective, frankly. The private sector needs and wants results. I certainly do. Really driven for results. And economic analytics are helping to drive that. So there's a little bit of pride in that fact, frankly. In terms of the assets, and how they're being leveraged across the region, and businesses and so on. This is still coming together, and I think we're gonna begin to hear specifically live on May 13th, really the menu of March 13th, a menu of options come before us. And we're gonna actually be doing American Idol voting live. I'm serious. About what are the best options for the region, and everybody in that room, I don't know, 200 or so will be in the room from across the 38 counties making choices about what matters most to them in that region. I think the question came up a little earlier, is this, we should bring in other partners and so on and see what they're doing. I think that'd be fantastic, but I will say this, there isn't anything like this in the country. This is the first of its kind. It hasn't been done this way. The timeline is very clear. Tax dollars aren't initiating this. People aren't coming in and hiring staff first and then deciding what we stand for. This is mission-driven, partner-driven, region-driven, all partners. And that's probably the difference here, and it's timetables and deliverables in large part because that's what the private sector has to have and the partners really support. So that maybe sort of frames maybe something around this, but you are all invited to this March 13th meeting in Mankato.
I'm sure he's got other things to do. But at the end of the day, I think we'll provide a great culmination of what this is about and where we're headed.
Chairman Mahoney, thank you. Just if I could add to that, one of the things that has been paramount as we've gone through, in particular the qualitative and quantitative data side of this, is looking what data already exists from all of the partner institutions, both at the planning committee level, but also the people that have been involved. And so information has been utilized from the FIRST grants that have been doing some of their own research, the research that the BioBusiness Alliance did related to Destination 2025, and the high-level bioscience asset inventory has been integrated into this, along with information that some of the Minnesota State Colleges and University system has conducted as well. And specifically, as we get to the issues around workforce development related to these economic strategies, that's something that's very much a part of our strategy. In fact, the Minnesota State Colleges and University systems and the Mayo Clinic have been very active in this piece. And after that March 13th meeting to be able to decide what are the economic options from that menu of options that this region wants to pursue from the partnership, you know, groundswell base, then we can start to look more specifically at the workforce piece. But that's definitely a major piece that's being considered.
I think I'm next on the list, so I have a couple of questions. You say you started last January, likely to be have a report in May, approximately 18 months. Then the implementation, do you have a kind of a guesstimate as to how long to kind of start actually getting some of this into place and moving it forward?
Mr. Chairman, we certainly do. That's a great question, and we're certainly wired for that that aspect of this. Really, on June 1st, this is turned over to a new governance structure. The partners are certainly sort of the board members of this, if you will. We're going to move it to a governance structure, and somebody's going to take over that governance role. I'm on the Center for Rural Policy and Development's Board of Directors here, meeting upstairs, one directly above us, and Representative Brainerd on it as well, and we just voted to consider governing that process. I think that's an appropriate role for that group, a very critical role for that group. That will begin really on June 1st in earnest. As we mentioned here, there are five specific areas of focus. There are task forces, or really governance groups around those, and they're beginning to move forward quickly. I'm really a part of, along with Pam and with Becca here, working with this bioscience group, and we're beginning to move towards a discussion about how do we leverage the strength in that room to commercialize application of growing crops for research. So I can't give you a timeline on when that's going to happen, but we're all very focused about how we can get that done because the Research Institute needs it, and Mayo is excited about it. There's a lot of excitement in that room about some of the information that's been exchanged between Mayo, Cornell Research Institute, and farm groups, and Southern Minnesota Experiment Station. The other groups are also meeting. We have a food and egg group that's meeting right now. We're going to introduce them to a couple of different opportunities. One is very focused around diversity in agriculture. And a Latino group that's worked on an agripreneur program, I think we'll find a great deal of assistance by plugging into that group and finding the capital, as well as for the farmers and for the organization. So that's an example. I think that one's going to be a little bit quicker moving. And so I think each of these groups are going to move forward a little bit at different paces, but we're trying to engage them. Some are not engaged, frankly, I would say. Others engaged and moving ahead very quickly. This is going to be hard to pinpoint on July 1st, it's all up and running kind of a thing. It's
before you go any farther, I'm a pipe fitter, so agripreneur?
Yeah, it's called agripreneur.
What is that, like an entrepreneur only with farming?
Agricultural entrepreneur.
Okay.
Exactly.
I just wanted to make sure.
These are Latino growers that grow really for environmental purposes and are gardeners really, and poultry farmers, and they're fantastic at what they do.
You mean like the half a dozen chickens or a dozen roosters that are down the block from me?
Yeah, I guess so. These are much larger facilities than that.
Chairman Mahoney, can I just add one other comment? I see this as a real paradigm change. In other words, you asked about implementation. There will be an implementation plan. But my hope is that this is long-term and sustainable. This is a new way of doing economic development. that includes long-term sustainability by partners and organizations. So I don't ever see this ending. If we do our job right, this will be an ongoing, evolving, ever-changing way of doing economic development in a regional strategy based on the industries that we believe best fit with the assets and the analytics that demonstrate we have the best opportunity for global success here. And so I don't ever see it ending.
Well, that kind of almost takes half my question away, because my next question was, what is your, do you have a schedule for updating your plan? And it sounds like your plan is to update it. You don't have May 15th as a start. What, 6 months later, a year later, you don't have that particular as worked out just yet. But I guess the question I have is, and you seem to have answered it, but you do have some schedule or sense that you're going to be updating this on a yearly or quarter, you know, some kind of basis.
Tim and Mahoney, yes, that is correct. Some of that will be determined by the actual organization that John mentioned that will take over the governance of the implementation. My guess is that it may there may be some metrics that we can follow up with yearly, but I don't know if it would be useful to go through and do this whole process every year or every 18 months as it may be. My guess is that updating the strategy side of it would be a longer term, but there will be metrics that can be tracked at least yearly in between.
Representative Winkler? Do you want to talk about a village?
No, Mr. Chair. I was thinking of coining a new term, civicpreneurs. I guess it's just my my general sense or feeling that a lot of our economic success historically in Minnesota has been because our business culture has been more civic-minded than in a lot of places, and our political culture has been more pragmatic than in a lot of places. And I think you represent the best of what that tradition is, and we need to support it. But I guess I want to get to the kind of pragmatic question and into your economic analytics. I guess how do you measure success? Is it job? Is it income? Is it sort of a GDP for your region? Economic growth? What are you driving for to define success?
Okay. Chairman Mahoney, Representative Winkler, perfect question. Fantastic. This is going to be an opportunity to develop entrepreneurs that could be two people in the basement of a home. It could be 100 people working in a meat processing plant in Chandler, Minnesota. Certainly it's driven as well by job growth. It's driven by economic development within a region. My definition of what really will define success is when we become globally competitive within these industries, which is the goal. Globally competitive. Not in southern Minnesota, but really where we are able to sustain that pool of labor as well as the business model to become competitive with India, China, others. And it truly makes a difference. I think you could look at Schwann's as being one of those that has accomplished that in Marshall, Minnesota. And I don't know that to that scale we're going to get there, but it will be an outgrowth of entrepreneurs. It will likely be small businesses that will develop, and I think that's where the true opportunity is going to come from, is that small entrepreneurial-minded approach to doing things differently. It's the small commercialized application of growing crops for cancer research where the revenue isn't derived per acre but by gram. That's the kind of thing we're talking about. I think those are the types of things that we will see a model from and begin to develop, globally competitive initiatives.
Chairman Mahoney, if I may answer as well. Representative Winkler, I think the metrics that you saw here, there were three of them that I think are critical that will be tracked throughout this, which is the number of jobs in the region, the number of new businesses, or excuse me, the number of new businesses is one that we didn't talk about earlier, wages for the region, because that's a key indicator of economic success, and then looking again at the out-migration of workforce and hoping to change those statistics around.
And, Mr. Chair, follow-up, you know, it seems, I understand the reason for kind of aggregating the data across the region, but it seems to me that what's likely happening is you have certain regional centers that are doing very well and a lot of areas that are really struggling. and that you, if you look at that regional economic or regional employment number, you'll see that you're exceeding Minnesota and the nation in some areas, and probably falling way behind in others. And that the, so I guess the, you know, I think it's a question. I don't have a good answer about what the good policy goal is, but there's the effort to grow the pie, right, to make the region as a whole do better. But by doing that, you might be heavily favoring Mankato, Marshall, and Rochester, and other places. Or there's the effort to try to spread some of those benefits around within the region and try to help out more communities. And so I can see, you know, there's a point in both to a degree, but I guess the question is, do you think the region is ready to kind of pick winners and losers among communities? And is that going to be something you have to address?
Chairman Mahoney and Representative Winter, that's an excellent question. This is something that the planning team has struggled with actually quite a bit as we were looking at the region and the different sub-regions within. And so as we did the analytics and did the qualitative meetings as well with folks from the community, we did look both at sub-regions as well as the overall region. And I think one of the things that this regional perspective and this partnership model offers is a way to build on the strengths that the regional centers have and also shore up the weaknesses that maybe some of the areas that historically haven't been as strong. I could think of it as using the manufacturing expertise of a Mankato, of an Owatonna, and building that out elsewhere in the community, being able to share expertise. And one of the things that I think has been really apparent through these meetings is that people want to do this. You mentioned the fact that Minnesota has a very civic-minded business culture. And that's one thing that I think will help to drive this in a way where we don't just have regional winners that are kind of the same places that maybe are the population centers or the traditional economic engines. That's a key piece of this project, is to make sure that the whole region can win. So there's not a clear answer yet, but I think that's very much in the minds of the planning committee, and I would say also of the people that have been involved.
Representative Winkler, I want to make sure I get to everyone, so if you could hold that thought, because we've got about six people here. Representative Hilke, you had a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To whoever wants to answer this, so far the discussion has been pretty much in terms of abstract. In order to have identified five areas of opportunity, I would presume that you have some vision of what might actually occur specifically within those, something that you would anticipate or something that you would like to see happen specifically. Could you give any examples of what kind of vision you have for those areas of opportunity?
I'm happy to do that, Mr. Chairman and Representative Hilke. This is unfolding before our eyes right now. We're in the midst of a process. We haven't completed the research, so there's a bit of work to do. As you know, we're going to be voting on economic options here on March 13th. Absent that, my answer to that question would be yes, very specifically. Around the bioscience group that's formed, which we're three of us, I would hope very much so that we will have a commercialized application of a plot where growers will be growing specifically for the purpose of cancer research. A commercialized application. What's missing from that right now is a capital network, access to a capital network, and some of the growers and others and the kinds of foods that are going to provide those opportunities. We've got to connect those people to get that done. Once we start moving on that commercialized application and really begin to focus on a model that sincerely meets the need of the Hormel Research Institute in Mayo to get that done, I think that specifically would be an answer to one of the questions you're asking. It would be a result we're looking for within a region that would be globally competitive. Another is this agripreneur. We were talking about that on the food and ag sector. This group has to have a training center to train these growers to grow the crops in the manner in which is environmentally friendly and so on. That's truly profitable for poultry and grain. When that happens, they need a little training center that needs capital equity investment. That needs to happen, and we need to get plugged into this process to identify that capital network. We, AgStar, are going to be meeting with them to identify what are the capital needs per person, per farmer, and how we can finance those needs. A lot of data has already been put together to make that happen. And replicating that across the region is going to be very important, because there are a lot of Latino farmers across Minnesota. It's a really exciting opportunity that the Initiative Foundation introduced to us. and AgStar. And it's an opportunity for us to learn. Those two very specifically are two specific examples that I see are different. Really an opportunity in the region, I think a real revenue builder within the region as well, to show a model that's a lot different and hopefully globally competitive. Those are two examples I can come up with right now. They're going to evolve here shortly. I think a number of opportunities will begin to develop in all the sectors. We're not there yet, but those are two.
Go right ahead, Ms. Kent.
Chairman Mahoney and Representative Hilty, one other thing that I think outside of the science-based or technology-based is recreation and tourism. And although this task force hasn't done a whole lot yet, a lot of the data that's coming out of this, both from the analytics and from the people that are in the region, are saying there's really an opportunity to think about a brand for the 38-county southern Minnesota region when it comes to agricultural products. Do you think of things like what Napa Valley has done in California for wine? There are things that could be done around the agricultural products that are here in southern Minnesota. In addition to that, kind of around food products, there's also a growing wine business and brewery business in the south. There's actually already a tour where you can go from bed and breakfast to bed and breakfast around the southern part of the state to visit different wineries and breweries. There's a lot of opportunities within this as people are wanting to know more about the local food systems, organic food systems, knowing where their food comes from. So there's a real untapped opportunity here that I think, waiting to be more fully explored in this particular region as well.
Representative Hilty, any follow-up on that? No. Representative Poppy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and welcome to all of you. I do commend you for the work that you've done, but I'm going to just throw out a little healthy skepticism about how it will be successful. And I'm just sorry, just a couple of things, maybe some questions. I know that sometimes it's very difficult to bring people together and to come up with a regional identity. And I'm just curious about how you're going to handle the somebody said the subsets, the subgroups, or just the separate entities that currently exist that provide for job growth or other things. How are you? How do you anticipate working through that?
Changing the name to Roch Austin.
Austin would come first. Thank you.
Oh, my God.
Chairman Mahoney and Representative Poppy, another great question. There's no easy answer to that. One of the things that we've tried to do, even as we tried to define the region, was we had several iterations, as John mentioned, of going from 22 counties to 30 to 38, as people saw the fact that we can't do this alone and we need to reach out. There are still turf battles. There are still squabbles, and I think that'll always be the case. I think the approach that we're taking, which is really trying to play a neutral facilitation role here for the region and be able to say, well, come in, let's talk about this. If you think this is your turf, well, tell us why. And if you've got the assets to back that up to say, yes, this is really, we should be the leaders in this, fantastic. But I think one of the things that the data piece to this, both the qualitative and the quantitative, really helps to disarm those conversations and those turf battles, where you can really start to say, well, the data says, yeah, that this is where you can be a leader. And, you know, you really don't have the critical mass to do that. If you'd like to do that, here are some other organizations with which you should be partnering. I don't think it'll be an easy road. It never will be. But I think so far we've managed to deal with some of the few squabbles, I think, quite effectively using that approach.
Mr. Chair, and just another question regarding, it seems as though you're kind of an ad hoc group right now in the governance structure, and as you are anticipating going into, I certainly value the Center for Rural Policy and Development and appreciate the work they've done in the past, and but I'm a little concerned about how, if people are not as engaged and don't have as much skin in the game, if the collaboration now exists because they know they're being listened to and heard and a part of it, and it kind of goes to this different governance structure, how you, again, might anticipate its success.
Chairman Mahoney, Representative Poppy, I like these questions because it's getting to the heart of what's a full partnership. What we did here, we found 15, 16 partners, whatever that amounts to, everybody's got a skin, it's got skin in the game. They put money in this, or in kind time. And those that didn't put money in have spent considerable time. For example, the Blandon Foundation, who has really not been a part of our discussions, put in $45,000. We've been deeply involved. We have, and we've put a lot of money in this. That's our skin in the game. And when we put the skin in the game, we really agreed to be a full partner. You're looking at a pretty significant skeptic right here. I normally don't like too many visioning strategic processes. I don't like meetings. And all about results. And we want people at the table that are going to truly contribute. And it needs to be meaningful and needs to be productive. And I think that's exactly what the private partners expect from this, honestly, and are driving a lot of the investment in this. So I think there's a lot of, we've overcome a lot of hurdles, as Becca was saying. I really didn't think we'd make it this far. I didn't think the partners would pull together. It really has been hurting cats. It has. It's been tough. I didn't know this whole rural development arena. I'm an ag guy. This is tougher. Farm groups, they think and act and talk as one voice. That's not necessarily the case here. There's a lot of segments to this. There's healthcare. There's manufacturing. There's agriculture. These people don't talk to each other. But for the first time, now they are. We've gotten this far. I'm beginning to be convinced we've got something going on here that might sustain itself. There's one component that matters most, and it is the biggest challenge to overcome. It's sustaining this. Can the partners sustain this? I don't know. I think so. We've come this far. I think we've demonstrated something that nobody else can demonstrate. We didn't start with putting on staff. And tax dollars aren't driving this. These are people that are ad hoc coming together because they see an opportunity to do something different and let it be led by research. So I think the people are seeing the value in that each time we can get in front of them. I hope you're beginning to see the value in this because it's taking a different approach. This is the story we're going with, and these partners have engaged in this. And 500 other partners we think may come back and be engaged in this. So a lot of them don't have skin in the game, but I hope they understand the value this can bring. I don't know what the other game is in town. There's a bunch of initiatives, but I don't know if there's any clear deliverables and timeframes with sustainable model, I think, out there. This is our game in town. We think that people see it as the game in town, and we want to replicate it. I would love to talk to you about replicating, and I think there's an opportunity to do that in Minnesota, in regions that are completely different, but really have a need. So I think there's something good here, and I hope the passion shows through, and I hope that it's contagious.
Before Ms. Bishop comments, I will tell you that replicating this is probably more important than... I think it's very, very important. Ms. Bishop?
Thank you, Chairman Mahoney, Representative Poppe. John reinforced the comment I was going to make, and that's its value. We've learned a lot of lessons learned in this process, perhaps things we would do differently, and hopefully we'll have a chance to do that by replicating it somewhere else. But again, going back to what I've learned as a partner, and that's truly when you start developing relationships with people you didn't know existed or didn't fully understand, there's that value. And hopefully that value in the relationships that we are starting to build, the collaboration that is starting to surface, will only reinforce the importance of the partners wanting to come back to the table and to continue on. Now we know, honestly, we will probably not get the same basis moving forward. Some folks are better at process, and some folks are better at implementation. And in fact, there are probably folks we need for implementation that we have not approached yet. Folks like yourself. So I think truly we will see an evolution of our partnership, but that's okay, because as partners evolve, there'll be reasons for the changes of faces. We truly want people who will come to the table when the implementation phase begins that want to be accountable, responsible, and truly see the value of this process, because if that's not what they're coming to the table for, they will not be effective partners. And so I think overall, the partners that have come to the table to date are truly understanding the importance of this process, and they're realizing that their job and our jobs together can get done so much easier, and it can be so much more fun and exciting when you start doing things together versus trying to compete or duplicate services.
Do you have a follow-up? I'm going to skip to someone who hasn't asked a question, Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I really don't have a question. This is a couple of observations. I think that
as you folks move ahead, because I was born and raised in a small town area of central Pennsylvania where it seemed like most of the world and excitement passed us by. And I've got to tell you, two of my kids have started their families and set up shop in your region. Six of my grandchildren live there and are going to schools in this region. And some of the industries you zeroed in here, my kids actually work in. So it's more observations, I guess, just from a little perspective. John, Mr. Monson, I believe, you touched a little bit about the people. And I want to encourage you, as you look at your assets, to not expect too much from us, because we're government. We're supposed to wear blindfolds and be fair and even-handed with everybody. And our job, as I see it, is to keep the playing field level and to make sure that people, like the people who are in your region, can flourish, can do what they need to do. We run the schools, we run the courts, we pretty much pave and plow the highways and make sure the toilets flush and things like that. That's good. Good thing for us to do. But as you're looking around your region, I'm going to name five families that I think have been for 150 years driving your economic engine, and I think as you have your partnership, that part of your challenge is going to be to identify the next five families, 50 families, 500 folks who will drive you into the future much more so than we will. I'm thinking of the Mayos, and I'm thinking of the Davis family. I'm thinking of McNeilius and the Taylors and the Schwans, who somehow, in spite of the best efforts of government, did a pretty darn good job of not only building businesses, real businesses, where willing sellers willingly bought their products because they were the best in the marketplace, but they were also, if I can borrow Representative Winkler's term, they were civicpreneurs. They stayed home. They hired the farm kids, and they built the businesses on Main Street. For some reason, they stayed there until recently, when I know McNeilius got an offer he couldn't refuse, and some other things have happened there. But I would encourage you, as you're debating what's going on and where the future is, find out what made those people tick. What was the human dynamic there? What was the human capital that made them stay in Dodge Center, or that made them stay in Le Sueur, or make them stay in Marshall? And how can we, at the worst, not get in the way of that, and maybe at the best, how can we encourage that? How can we move that along? Because at the end of the day, that's what makes small towns grow. Which leads me probably to my last point. As I'm looking at your last slide here, you've pointed to five strategic opportunities you see. I would suggest to you that there are four real businesses there, then one where you're on a little bit of thin ice. When I'm looking at the families who have built southern Minnesota, and I know I'm missing some because I can think of the Hormel family right away and some others that have, and so I'm probably offending people inadvertently by not including other names.
Else you didn't mention.
Yes, so these are just the ones. Otherwise, we'd be here till 3 o'clock, Mr. Chairman. So, but just to make the point, remember that civic side and the human dynamic side of what made them stay, and what can we do to foster that and continue to make you strong and keep you... what I think to be the dynamics and the purity and the advantages of being in small town Minnesota and making that work. Now, the other thing is, when you're looking at your other businesses here, I see four of these are what I call real businesses. You're very proud of the fact you haven't had to have tax money to make this work. I applaud you for that. Please, you'll be much freer, much faster on your feet, and better to respond if you keep our tax money out of this in a reasonable fashion, except where we need to build you a water treatment plant or a highway or a bridge or a school. Otherwise, you're on your own, you're doing well. I'm cheering for you. The one I'm concerned about, though, is the one that is built entirely on government mandates. And you can probably guess which one it is as we look at this list. Be careful with that. It's going to be important as we move forward in the future that we have real alternative energies developed. And what I call real are the ones that willing buyers line up to buy willingly from willing sellers, and the ones that make real economic sense. The ones we have at the moment are great ideas that exist largely because people that hang around this place have mandated that they exist. Or we tax other people and we give producer payments or things like that to continue to foster the existence and development of these businesses. Somewhere down the road, I hope we're at the place where there are real businesses, and your small towns won't have to come up here on your knees begging us not to eliminate a tax payment or eliminate a mandate. And I think when you're in that kind of a position,
when you have willing buyers, willing sellers, and what I call real businesses in all your little towns out there, you'll be able to hold your head just a little higher and be a little stronger for it. And I think it'll hark back to some of the underlying spiritual and human dynamics that made some of these other families prosperous and help build your region. Keep up the good work and let us know how we can stay out of your way.
President Bryant?
I actually do have a question, but I'm going to say something first just because Representative Beard, needless to say, inspired a different thought in my...
He forgot another name?
And I do agree with a great deal of what he said, but one of the reasons this type of initiative is so successful in southern Minnesota is there are incredible public-private partnerships in that area at the local level where all partners come to the table, and government does have a role. I have a very different perspective on government being the voice of the people, and I think it is as flexible as business is in terms of representing the real interests of a community. I think we have to be certain that it remains that way, but that's just a comment on what I consider southern Minnesota's extraordinary success at collaborative partnerships across public-private lines. But my question is for Ms. Kent, and I'm wondering how this endeavor, and it doesn't have anything to do with those comments, so I won't get you in a politically difficult position. I'm wondering how this partnership influences, in your estimation, the strategic vision of the Bio-Business Alliance.
Chairman Mahoney and Representative Ryan, thank you for that question. That's an excellent question. I think that's one of the things that why we were invited as the Bio-Business Alliance, not necessarily being located in southern Minnesota, but having a statewide reach to come to the table here, because they knew the fact that without even doing any of the analytics, that bioscience and that agriculture were key areas for this region. And so we were actually approached, John Munson from AgSTAR. We had been talking about some finance systems for some of the companies that the Bio-Business Alliance works for, and he shared with me what he had learned about this regional Rupri Center, the Rural Policy Research Institute, and we decided this would be a great model to look at how is it that you can provide a regional strategy that coordinates up to a statewide strategy. And so the Destination 2025 project that my boss, Dale Wallstrom, testified before this committee on February 4th is really a statewide plan, and it's specific to bioscience. That being said, just like this, it's a model that can be replicated into other industries, and it's something that we've very heavily been involved both in the planning for this, in inputting some of the data, providing some of the technical expertise from the Bio-Business Alliance side. And again, there was a question earlier about have the other initiative foundations, the other six across the state, the two that are involved in this project, have been approached about this. And we've actually been talking with Pam Bishop from the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation and the Bio-Business Alliance, looking at how is it that we can create a role for the initiative foundations to support bioscience in their communities. And so I think what's been happening with this Southern Minnesota Regional Competitiveness Project, along with the Destination 2025 Project, is something that will be rolled out across the rest of the state.
Gottwell?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll keep my comments brief. I think a number of people have touched on some of these things, but just speaking from the perspective of somebody who's participated in a regional economic development partnership, the St. Cloud Area Economic Development Partnership since the early 80s, and served on the board and chaired that board for a while. Replication would be great. I wish you a lot of luck, and I really hope you're successful, and I hope we do steal ideas from this and distribute them. I think we need to hear more of these kinds of things happening. Just a couple of thoughts as well. Along the lines that Representative Baird was talking about building new leadership in a community, we've created a thing called ELF in St. Cloud. It's basically Entrepreneurial Leadership Forum. And these are young entrepreneurs who've been invited to become part of a forum and put some skin in the game, some capital into it. They meet regularly. They decide what initiatives they are going to help fund. And it's really begun building those new pillars for the future of our community. That's one idea you might want to toss around. The other thought about the partnership, because we went through some tough times as we got into middle life. There's a lot of excitement early on. Everybody's, wow, this is the first time we've sat down together, and we've got resources, and we've got, And after a while, the partners start asking, what are we getting for this? You know, this is a line item in our budget. You've been asking us for the last 10 years, $6,000 or $10,000 or whatever you're putting into the partnership. What are we getting back for that? And they're going to want to have good, solid answers to that. What have you, not only what have you done, but what are you giving us? And then the continuity of effort. Leadership. You've got somebody who's very passionate here, a couple few people who are very passionate. What happens when those people move on? You have new people who have the same energy who can keep it moving ahead. And then finally, and this is a question I wanted to ask, is how are you working through the issues of turf? We encountered things like branding. Okay, so let's say it's the St. Cloud Area Economic Development Partnership? Then what does that do for Cold Spring and some of the other communities? Is it going to be the Rochester Area Initiative? When you're marketing for economic development, how are you dealing with some of the turf issues between public-private partners? Have you encountered any of that, and how are you dealing with it?
That's a great question, Mr. Chairman. We've identified who are the key leaders in the region, and a number of us have met with them and sort of explained the value of all this. Sometimes people engage immediately and say, wow, we'll throw money at that. Others say, you're pushing water uphill, forget about it. Honestly, when we went into Rochester, that's exactly the reaction we got. You're pushing water uphill. I don't understand why how we fit into this thing. And, you know, people come to us to leverage us. I don't know that we need to leverage others. Well, we thought maybe we'd just talk to the wrong people. I think we did. We started talking to Mayo, and we started talking to Hormel Research Institute and started understanding the tangible value of bringing together the farm groups with research and medical institutions. All of a sudden, the power that wasn't previously understood came together. I really believe the way we overcame it, in that case, was something tangible in demonstrating a clear value. And I do think that's where the private sector really creates something here that can be very important and productive in moving those kinds of things forward, because we think in tangible terms, we think in terms of results, and think in terms of getting stuff done. We're not trying to ram things through. I think at times people may feel I do. But I think at the same time, I think because of the passion. So I think if we can get people to understand what's going on in a region and get them to understand the value that can be leveraged from their strength and the value they can leverage from other strengths, recognizing there are others, that in southwest Minnesota, agriculture is a powerhouse. It is a powerhouse. And getting Rochester to understand it and how to leverage it in a tangible way changes thinking. The good news is we have enough capital at AgStar, over $5 billion, that they'll listen to us. And I think there are others that will listen to us. When you bring in the farm groups who have the political power and marketing power, they'll listen. So we overcome it with something tangible and, honestly, credibility, I think. And then ultimately you have an opportunity to provide leadership around those issues. So we get a little practical about it. Honestly, I think that's how we've overcome it.
Just a quick follow-up, if I may.
Yes.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just to take that a little bit further and maybe for your own edification, when you start marketing to the global marketplace and you want to win those gold medals you're talking about in your materials, you're going to run into, when you're marketing, are you marketing for one community or the other, one group or the other? And unless you've got a really massive organization, somebody's going to say, we're getting the short end of the stick. They got the plant, we didn't. They got the expansion, we didn't. That entrepreneurial group got money, we didn't.
That's a great remark. And part of this has been a full partnership means understanding that when Big Stone County wins, Houston County sees it as a win. How do you create a brand in a region? Becca mentioned earlier, that's really difficult to achieve. And I don't think we'll ever overcome it completely. But when Big Stone County understands that Houston County's win is a win for Big Stone County and vice versa. In my mind, the question isn't, is this truly a region? The question is there enough commonality for us to build on a region? I think there's enough similarities there and commonality that it can be built on that region. So I don't think we'll get there completely. There will always be some of that. But I think it's an attempt to brand a region and its assets where it makes strategic sense to really recruit businesses and opportunities or create those opportunities. Hopefully the region views it as a win.
And I'm going to take the prerogative. My turn. I'll make this comment. This is not new ground you're plowing in its entirety, because I know of three other states that have large regional plans that actually do have government involvement at the top in certain ways. but I will agree with both sides here to some extent. Private industry does tend to drive these things a little bit better and keeps them a bit more nimble, but you don't, it doesn't always work out in the long run if government doesn't have some involvement. Got three actual questions here. Mr. Munson, you spoke to the Latino farms. Are we talking 5-acre plots, 50-acre plots, 5,000-acre plots?
Mr. Chairman, great question. The agripreneur program that we're working on actually does identify specific plots in Northfield and Red Wing area, and they've designated names to those areas, and they're like 5, 8, and 10-acre plots, more like that. But there are hundreds of Latino farmers that are involved, and so that's exciting, along with community support for it. So, and some of the poultry operations are a little bit bigger, but in the end, these are not commercial, I mean, large corporate farms, not at all. They're very small individual farms, and some are cooperative-based, where a number of the farmers come together and put together their resources and capital resources to grow a poultry operation, for example, or a garden market.
See, now I know where all those muddy pickup trucks are coming from to come back to my district on Sunday evening. One of the questions I have is the workforce councils and the numbers that you have in these 38 counties. How many are there, and how many have you been able to bring into this collaboration?
Chairman Mahoney, I believe there are three, and they are all in the collaboration, and primarily because of the first grant. This really provided the first grant groups a mechanism to do some asset mapping to help further the understanding of the collaboration that they're required by the deed grant criteria to perform. So at the end of the day, at the end of their deadline, we're hoping that this has provided some analytics and some asset discussion that they might not have been able to gather alone. And then hopefully this broaden that work for them in a way that also allowed them to share in this collaboration.
And my final question is, earlier in the process here, I passed out some bubble charts that kind of laid out the types of industries and the size of the industry and how big it was for the areas that, you know, it broke it down metro, rural, and then statewide. Are those, and it all just came from the numbers out of deed. Would I be able to find that on your website? You know, what kind of industries you have and how big they are compared to say, the national average?
Chairman Mahoney, yes, the information is on the Southern Minnesota Regional Competitiveness website. And I actually also have handouts of the two PowerPoints that I'd be happy to leave with you as well.
Thank you. Representative, I think Representative Haas has not asked the question yet, so I'll give you...
I was just going to make a comment to... thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to make a comment to my friend across the tables here, Mr. Gottwald. You know, when we're... that neighborhood or the envy of the neighbor is a big factor in this, and it really stops it from producing. However, as these areas mature and they experience failure, the experience of that failure is really deeply understanding how widespread the business is and where they all live and what they take down when they go down. So sometimes I think it takes that type of failure. If you remember in our area, and we were down, remember in our area, and we were down here when Finger Hut went down. I was surprised at the number of people that were working for Finger Hut that were farmers just so that they would have health care, and that was their only concern. They really didn't even care whether they were paid. They had their family health care there, and that's what they were working with. And then the donut man called me up one day and said, I don't have any place to sell donuts. My donut business just went under. So when you see the ripple effect of the failure, I think it's a little bit easier to convince people the positive success and how much that is related to everybody in the given region. That's just a comment. Thank you, Mr. Gunnell.
Well, there are no more questions lined up, but I will make this comment. I appreciate the effort and the work that you're putting into this, because I truly do believe when regions in whole or larger areas actually work together, the success is spread out amongst many people and it grows an area. And southern Minnesota, you alluded to the fact that it's a little bit lower in wages. That is a problem. I have roots in the rural communities and know that most of the people that grew up on the old century farm have moved away from the farm because the money just wasn't out in rural Minnesota. This is an effort to bring that money back, to make manufacturing a big issue, farms a big issue, and all the others that go with it. So, I guess we have one more, Representative Anderson. But thank you for coming.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I didn't catch where all three of you were from. As far as the diversity of the region from west to east, north to south, are you in proximity or are you scattered yourself?
Chairman Mahoney and Representative Anderson, the Biobusiness Alliance, which is the organization that I work for, actually has a statewide jurisdiction. We work a lot in the southern region. In fact, Pam Bishop has been a great partner with the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation for us, and their organization has agreed to be a pilot organization and work with their region on the bioscience side specifically.
Chairman Mahoney and Representative Anderson, I'm Pam Bishop. I'm with the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation, and we are based in Owatonna, and we cover 20 counties in the region. So all the way from the Mississippi to the Iowa border to primarily Mankato area.
Chairman Mahoney, Representative Anderson, I'm John Munson with AgStar Financial Services. We have Eastern and southern two-thirds of Minnesota in our territory, including northwest Wisconsin. I live in Cannon Falls, which is a small community here between here and Rochester, and I have lived in small towns my whole life, so in Minnesota. So this is a pretty deep passion for our company and for myself.
But you grew up in White Lakes.
Grew up in White Lakes. Good thing.
Good Iron Ranger.
Yep.
I have an uncle from White Lakes. Yeah. Ms. Canton, you're from where?
The Biobusiness Alliance of Minnesota. We're a nonprofit.
Specifically, where do you live?
I live in the metro area. We're based out of St. Louis Park.
The Biobusiness Alliance is on the other side of the river. We don't go over there very often.
Right. The headquarters for this whole region is Owatonna. Is that where it's headquartered out of?
Chairman Mahoney, Representative Anderson, no. The Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation is based out of Owatonna. This doesn't have a home, per se. The partnership, although we have been managing the process overall and partnering very closely with AgStar, our meetings have been primarily in Mankato. Again, going back to how do we compromise with our partnership, it seems to be middle ground, and that's how we've managed the project.
Thank you.
Again, thank you for coming, and I hope that you will update the committee or the individual committee members as this process moves along. I am relatively excited by this. I hope it works out. Love to see it. Thank you.
Thank you.
With that, the committee is adjourned. Thank you, members.